Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's Wednesday, and it's time for the Dakota Political Junkies to unpack the state headlines of the week and help you understand and process all that's going on in South Dakota. We're joined today on the phone in Sioux Falls by Dana Ferguson, watchdog political reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Dana, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Also with us in Rapid City from the Black Hills Bureau, SDPB's new Black Hills Bureau, Denise Ross. Welcome, Denise.
Thank you, Lori.
All right, let's start with the deadline for the ballot measures. The ballot's beginning to take shape for 2018. We're about a year out from the election, and obviously signatures need to be counted and work needs to be done. But what do we know so far about what has made ahead to the next step? Denise, you want to start?
I will try. There are so many of them that I honestly have trouble keeping track of them. But the deadline was this week to turn in the petitions. The Secretary of State staff are now going through those signatures. So we don't yet have the official word that these will be on the ballot. But I think we could assume that the majority of them will make it to the ballot. And we'll just have to wait for word out of here to see if there are any problems with any of these measures. I will say I was at the courthouse here in Rapid City last week, and the petition folks were outside the door busy gathering signatures. And the guy who had the clipboard for the gerrymandering petition, he said that that was a very popular one. People were eager to sign that one. So I think, and if I remember what I read correctly, that one did have quite a number of signatures over the minimum. And so I think that one will be one we can look forward to voting on. And then the few that didn't make it had to do with recreational marijuana, and I will resist the obvious jokes about them not being able to get their signatures collected on the ballot. And it slips my mind, but this, oh, it was the euthanasia assisted dying for the terminally ill. They're the two that didn't make it.
Dana, what do you think, what stands out in this list? The initiated amendment, maybe, that sort of aims at another run at some of the, you know, foundational principles of IM-22?
I think it's interesting to look at a few of the measures that seem to be directly related back to measures that passed or didn't pass back in 2016. The constitutional amendment that I believe you're mentioning has to do with campaign finance and ethics. Essentially, it's a repackaging of initiated Measure 22 that we saw last year. But this time, supporters got the signatures to potentially pass that as a constitutional amendment, which means, and I think this is something that the supporters really wanted to make clear of, legislators wouldn't be able to repeal it if it is passed. So they're bringing a similar measure to the one we saw last year that would decrease some of the campaign finance limits. It would create some new ethics laws for legislators, lobbyists, and others. And essentially, it's a second running at the ballot after voters narrowly approved something pretty similar last year. And if you'll recall, lawmakers in Pierre earlier this year struck that, and over the summer they've been working on figuring out what pieces they want to bring back in statute beginning next year. And then sort of similar to that, I think House Speaker Mickelson's proposal to ban out-of-state money for ballot measure campaigns is also directly related to what we saw last year. We saw millions of dollars come into the state from outside that had to do with supporting Mercy's Law, which is a constitutional amendment that deals with victims' rights, as well as IM-22. A handful of other proposals we saw on the ballot for supporting unions and other policies, including the gerrymandering proposal last year and a couple others. So I think there's going to be an ongoing conversation about these campaigns, whether they're supported more by in-state groups or out-of-state groups. And it'll be fun to watch another year of many, many ballot measures, potentially not quite as many as last year, which is exciting for me as a reporter who has to cover the whole slate of them. So there are a couple that are right on the, seem to be right on the number required for signatures. The remainder, it seems like, are in pretty good standing to be approved, but that will be up to the Secretary of State's office to determine whether those signatures are valid and whether those measures will be on the ballot in 2018.
And Denise, I'm looking, and there are quite a few amendments, constitutional amendments proposed here, including open primaries and the one that you referred to about redistricting. Let's talk about gerrymandering or redistricting. What is the conversation in South Dakota? What's driving it? And what's pushing it forward? What's the next step in this conversation about how we choose districts, voting districts?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was a reporter for the Rapid City Journal, I went to Pierre for the redistricting hearings after the 2000 census and watched a process that did not make me feel really great about our democracy and the way things were being handled. And this all stems back to a Supreme Court decision, and I can't remember when, but the ruling essentially was that drawing these legislative and congressional district lines is a political process, and therefore it should be put in the hands of the politicians, which just struck me as one of the most wrongheaded things the courts have ever done. It's putting the fox in charge of the hen house without question, and you see it all over the country. And I just think, as human nature has followed its natural course and politicians have drawn districts more and more favorable to themselves and created more and more problems as a result in every state house and in Congress, the rise of the awareness of this situation has just become to a point where people are generally aware that this is going on and that it's really not serving the fundamental principles of our founding, the founding fathers of our democracy. And so people are fed up with it and they want to get it changed. And I think if it doesn't pass this time, I think you're going to see it come back again until it probably does ultimately pass. And there's a very interesting court case coming out of Wisconsin that deals with the fundamental right of one person, one vote, and do these gerrymandering districts actually deprive people of their right to vote? And so that's something that people will want to keep an eye on as it comes up to the U.S. Supreme Court here, and I'm not sure when, but it'll be coming up in the next year for sure. So now we see it on our ballot in South Dakota, and based on the conversation I had with the petition gatherer at the courthouse last week, people seem to be generally aware of what gerrymandering is, and that it doesn't serve democracy in a way that they like. And I watched back in 2000 or 2001, lines drawn right down the middle of the city of Huron, which was a Democratic stronghold, so that they could get the Republicans who didn't like the legislator out of here, and they could get him out of office. And that's exactly what happened. And that happened multiple times in different ways around the state. And so it continues to happen, and it will happen again after the 2020 census, unless, as citizens of our democracy, we can maybe do something about it.
And this would change, and we haven't been able to look at the entire amendment yet or see what it all entails, but my initial impression is that it established a commission to do that redistricting. Dana, is that how you understand what those folks are looking for?
Yeah, that is how I understand it. I think it's pretty similar to the proposal that voters didn't quite support in the majority last year, that it would be 9 people, no more than 3 from any one political party, sitting on an independent commission that would be charged with drawing the lines for legislative districts, whereas today, as you mentioned, there's a legislative committee that does that after every census. So I know that Republicans on that committee have been pretty vocal in their support of what they have done in the way of drawing lines. But again, we're seeing this proposal from a group that says that's not the best way to do it. And despite all of that arguing to the contrary, there needs to be a different way of doing that. I think I would agree that it'll be interesting to see the national news tied to this topic, whether that has any impact on South Dakota's decisions on how it wants to draw its legislative district lines.
Let's transition to a little bit of national news, Denise, and we'll pitch it over to you. But last night there were elections in places like Virginia and New Jersey. Democrats made a strong showing. People are still unpacking what that does and doesn't mean regarding the presidency of Donald Trump. And what does it have anything to do with South Dakota at this point? Can you make any connections to why we should be watching that?
Yeah. Well, there were two things that come to my mind. One is that the state of Maine, which I think is not unlike South Dakota, voted right. to expand Medicaid. So
isn't that interesting?
A strong suspicion that there are forces already at work here in our state thinking how they can get that on the ballot for 2020. But then what we saw in Rapid City over the summer actually quite surprised me. We had a Democrat by the name of Christine Stevenson run for the school board and win, and she defeated a very well-known political activist, woman by the name of Tanchi Weaver, who's been active for a very long time in Rapid City politics. Very well organized, very well connected, and I just had every expectation that Weaver would take that race because of how well organized and how passionate her supporters on the right wing end of the spectrum are. And it was not a close race. Christine Stevenson really, who was an unknown before that, she worked hard, but so did Tanchi Weaver, and she really took that race with a healthy margin. And then similarly at the city council, we had a Democrat by the name of Laura Armstrong take a seat against a couple of other candidates, one who'd held the city council seat before and was well known and also well organized among that right wing group. And so both of those races quite surprised me. And I don't know if that's if we saw the beginnings of what happened last night here in Rapid City over the summer, but it was certainly a surprise.
Dana Ferguson, did you have any thoughts from the national news this morning as you looked at things played out, whether it's expanding Medicaid in Maine or some of the victories in specific areas that made you pause and say that matters in South Dakota?
I was surprised at just the scale at which Democrats were able to win gubernatorial and mayoral elections across the country, especially in areas that had been very hotly contested leading into last night. I thought that was pretty surprising. I don't know to what degree that's going to matter for some of the statewide elections next year. Just looking at South Dakota's voter registration numbers now, Republicans almost have double the numbers of Democrats that are currently registered. And those who are not party affiliated or who register as independent are increasingly a growing number of registered voters in South Dakota. So Democrats at local and statewide levels that are able to appeal to those independent voters, potentially the more moderate Republican voters, might be able to win some of those legislative races or other contests that we're going to see in the next year, as there are some South Dakota Republicans or independents and certainly Democrats who might not agree with some of President Trump's policies so far and likely haven't been thrilled with the way that lawmakers in Pierre have voted against voter-approved measures in the last year or so.
What I'm wondering, too, Denise, is, you know, President Trump himself came out and said some of the people, I'm forgetting who he named by name now, didn't embrace his policies enough. Do you think that you see a call for people to really take a stand on pro-Donald Trump or against Donald Trump?
I mean, I think that is the conundrum that every Republican, right, especially those serving in Congress, will have going forward. And as you see Donald Trump's support in polls continue to erode, and it's not a dramatic drop, but it's a few percentage points. It seems like every time a wave of polls come out, there's a few percentage points down to where now he's below 40% in most of them. And I think you'll continue to probably see that. I don't see the trajectory changing. I don't see him changing, and I don't see the electorate changing all that much. I think when you look at people who strongly support Donald Trump, that's below 30%. And then you have the people who somewhat support him, and that gets you up into the high 30s right now. So I just think we're going to continue to see things. And then, of course, with the Russia investigation and moving as it is, you don't know what's lurking around the next corner for that. And so if you're a Republican in Congress and you haven't stepped forward yet to repudiate Donald Trump or even express reservations about what he's been doing, then I don't know at what point you do that with credibility now. If it's only after he's lost all support, then I don't know that how much that voters will take you seriously at that point.
Dana Ferguson, a really good question at this point might be, well, we believed the polls last time and they were wrong. So how much weight do we put in some of these polls, really?
I think it's hard to say. There are just so many flaws to the way that polls are done now as far as calling landlines or getting in touch with people in other ways, not to mention the fact that in South Dakota we just have so few polls as far as the president's support here, in which he's tended to outpace other states. He has a pretty strong fan base per those polls. But as you mentioned, we just don't know whether that's a viable indication of how strong the support for Republicans in Congress, the president, or others really is in South Dakota. We've heard anecdotes from people we talk to on a regular basis. In my mind, some of these ballot measures returning potentially for 2018 is a sign that there are people in the tens of thousands that aren't happy with the South Dakota legislature and its repeal of at least one ballot measure, possibly other moves too that they're not happy with. So I think some of these elections could give us a sign of what's to come in 2018, but I think we have to be careful too in saying that this Democratic wave is going to come through South Dakota just because the Democratic presence here certainly isn't what it is in other states.
Hey, Laurie, I did read an interesting story in the Washington Post yesterday about Democrats starting to pick up legislative seats in Oklahoma, a very red state, and a state that I think has replaced South Dakota at the bottom of the scale for teacher pay. They have an education crisis in that state. And sure. I think had we not done what we did with raising teacher pay and the half-cent sales tax, maybe that would be more of an issue here as well. But if Democrats can start to win legislative seats in a very red state like Oklahoma, maybe it can happen in South Dakota too, and I guess we'll just have to watch.
Right, and maybe a little compromise is a good thing. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe no one wants to come. Maybe no one has an appetite for compromise right now. I am relentlessly talking about compromise. But my guests right now, Denise Ross and Dana Ferguson. Dana, you can find her work at argusleader.com. Let's talk about a piece that you wrote about the watchdog, the GOAC committee report, and looking into the Mid-Central Educational Cooperative investigation. Some interesting things coming out of that report, Dana.
Sure. So I've been following along with the Government Operations and Audit Committee as well as State Tribal Relations Committee over the past couple of weeks, as well as over the course of the summer. GOAC had made a point of aiming to delve into the state's crisis with the Gear Up program, but more so with Mid-Central Educational Cooperative as far as how it mismanaged state and federal funds. Ultimately, as we all know, there was a murder-suicide there in 2015 that really jump-started investigation into that cooperative and how it was managing state dollars. More recently, GOAC had been trying to figure out exactly how broad that problem was, to what degree the Department of Education aimed to curtail problems there, and last week GOAC decided it was not going to insert into its report to the full legislature some of the testimony it had heard about the Department of Education getting sort of warning signs earlier than 2015 that Mid-Central was having problems, that there might be individuals there who were misusing funds. the strongest voice for including that language. Senator Stace Nelson was not in the committee that day. He was at a funeral for a friend, which I think had something to do with that decision, not quite making it. And the committee's chair, Senator Deb Peters, said it's not something that they're aiming to glaze over, that report is very much a summary from a higher level, that those conversations aren't going to be ignored in any way, but they're not going to be pointed out in that report to lawmakers in a way that some of the individuals on that committee felt good about. So we'll see whether that sparks yet another conversation or argument about to what degree the Department of Education was involved in some of the wrongdoing at Mid-Central. But we're not going to see it in the report.
All right. Denise, we also have a new Secretary of Education in January. It was announced this week. Melody Schaap will be retiring. December 15th is her final day. What do you make of that transition? We'll end with that.
Well, I think Secretary Schaap has, there was a lot that has come out about her leadership during the time and the warnings that she received ahead of this murder-suicide, this tragedy down in Platte that I think the entire state is still mourning. And so it's not a surprise then that given all that has come to light about what she was warned about and then what didn't happen after those warnings were made, that she's moving on and then she'll be replaced. We'll have to wait and see if the new leadership changes things in Pierre or how different oversight is handled. And I think that's why you're going to continue to see the legislative committee active and continuing to be active in their oversight role as well.
So much happening, and session is around the corner. The budget address is nearly upon us. We'll have even more to talk about. You can find Dana Ferguson's work at argusleader.com. Dana, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Denise Ross, Dakota political junkie from Rapid City. Thanks again.
Thank you.
That's always a pleasure.